The Gemara in Menachot and Daf Kaftet Amud Bet reads as follows. Now, your job right now is to do one thing. Actually, two things. One is to pay attention, and two is to identify problems within the text. And after I read it through one or two times, you will then tell me what you think the problems are. Just to make it more interesting for me, when you point out a problem, you'll tell me what kind of problem you think it is. If you think it's a logical problem, a theological problem, a textual problem, an inconsistency. So you can ask anything you want, but I'm going to ask you to describe what kind of question you've identified. Okay? Those are the terms. Those are...
You're scared most of
them. That's it? You already scared? Well, that keeps them quiet after. No. Seriously, your job is to ask, and this text will provide you with many opportunities. Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. Rav Yehuda taught in the name of Rav. Bisha'a sha'ala Moshe l'marom. At the time when Moshe ascended above, Matz'o, he found, l'hakadosh baruch hu, the Holy One, blessed be He, sheyoshev, was sitting, v'koshek tarim la'otiot, and he was tying crowns upon the letters. Now, if you pay attention, and it's even clearer in the very top line, you see these nice fonts that I used over here, which actually have the ketarim that actually you see on top of the shin, both by Kosher and by Moshe in the beginning, or by Akiva, the ayin. You see that it really does look like a crown. That's what the Gemara is referring to, that these crowns were being tied on top of the letters. Amar lefanav, Moshe says in front of God, Ribono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Mi ma'akev al yadcha. Who is holding back your hand? Rashi in source number 2 in the top line. Mi ma'akev al yadcha. Ma shekatafta. Shata tzarich losif od aleim ktarim. Which means what you wrote should be enough. Who's holding you back? And that you have to add on top of what you wrote crowns as well. Amar lo. God responds and says to Moshe. Adam echad yesh. There's one man, Shatid Liot, who's going to live in the future, Bisof Kamadarot, at the end of a number of generations, V'Akiva ben Yosef Shmo. And his name is Akiva, the son of Yosef. Sha'atid Ladrosh, I'll call Kotz for Kotz, that he is destined in the future, that he's going to be able to derive from the point of each crown, Tilei Tilim Shalachot, mountains upon mountains of laws. Amar Lefanav, Moshe says in front of God, Ribono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Harehu li, show him to me. Amar lo, God says to Moshe, Chazor la'acharecha, go in back of yourself. Halach, he goes, V'yashav l'sof shmone, or shmone esrei shirot, and he goes and he sits at the end of either the 8th or the 18th row in Rabbi Akiva's classroom. V'lo ha'yodeya mahin omrim, and he had no idea about what was taking place in the class. He did not understand anything. Tashash kocho. His strength ebbed away, or the vernacular would be, he got depressed. Kevin shagila davar echad, when he got to one particular point, Amru lo tamidav, Akiva's students, questioned and said, Rabbi, minayin lecha, Rabbi, where'd you get this from? Amar lahem, Akiva says to them, Halacha l'Moshe mi-Sinai, I have this on tradition for Moshe at Sinai, Nityash v'da'ato, and at that point, Moshe feels better. Chazar, he returns, Uba, l'fnei Kadosh Baruch Hu, he comes in front of God, Amar lefanav, he says in front of him, Ribono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Yesh lecha adam kazeh, v'ata noten Torah ayadi, he says, you have a man like this, and you're giving the Torah to me, or through my hands, via me. Amar lo, God says to him, Shtok, shut up. Kach Allah b'machshava lefanai. This is the thought that arose in my mind in front of me. Amar lefanav, Moshe continues and he says to God, Ribono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Har itani torato har eini scharo, you've shown me his Torah. Can I see his reward? Amar lo, Once again, God says to Moshe, Chazor la'acharecha, go in back of yourself. Chazar la'acharav, he goes in back. V'ra'an, he sees, Sheshoklin b'saro b'moklin. And he sees Rabbi Akiva's lifeless body being weighed on a meat hook. Amar l'fanav, Moshe says to God, Ribono shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Zo Torah v'zo schara, this is Torah and this is its reward. Amar lo, God says to him, Shtok, shut up. Kach Allah b'machshav l'fanai. This is the thought that arose in my mind in front of me. So, was there anything which was unclear? Or should I, one more time through. Moshe goes up, and he sees God putting these crowns, these ornaments on the letters. Moshe questions, and God says, there's one man who will live in the future. His name is Akiva ben Yosef. He says, can I see him? He says, sure, go him back. He goes him back. He finds himself standing in Rabbi Akiva's classroom, either in the 8th or the 18th row. He had no clue what was going on, and he gets depressed. One of the students raises a question and asks Rabbi Akiva, he goes, Rebbe, this stuff you're teaching, where did you get this from, or how do you know what you're teaching? And he says, I have a tradition from Moshe at Sinai, and then Moshe feels better. Moshe goes back to God and says, you have a man like this, you're giving the Torah to me? And God says to him, Shtok, this is the idea that arose in my mind in front of me. He says, you showed me his Torah, can I see his reward? And God takes Moshe and again sends him back. He goes and he sees Rabbi Akiva's lifeless body weighing on a meat hook. And he says, this is Torah and this is its reward. And God says, Shtok again, shut up. Kach Allah b'machshav l'fanai. That's the thought in my mind in front of me. So, again, is there anything which is possibly confusing, difficult in the text? Yes.
Okay, what were the categories of theological?
I'll make it up anyways. Okay,
there's, there's a logical problem.
Good.
That Rabbi Akiva tells his student that he learned this, that it's a tradition from Moshe, but Moshe doesn't have any idea what he's talking about. He doesn't understand what's going on there.
Good. Did you all hear? Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you think this is a major question, a minor question? What do you think?
About that, because they're inventing things he had nothing to do with.
Okay. I would tend to think, even though there are other candidates, I would tend to think that that is the major question within the text.
Rashi.
We'll get to Rashi. Get to Rashi. We'll get to Rashi. We'll get to the difficulty in Rashi. I would think that that's the difficulty within the text. What is it? It's essentially paradoxical. Moshe, just to understand the question, Moshe himself does not know what's going on. When questioned, Rabbi Akiva responds that I know there's some tradition from Moshe. So that is a paradox. And by the way, I want you all to appreciate how strong this paradox is. Because, and we'll get to Rashi, who maybe, yes, maybe not, solves everything for us. But I think that this question which is being raised, and this, by the way, is the beauty of this Agadah. The question that's being raised is a question which every single one of us should be concerned with. Which means if Moshe were to come into our lifetimes today, and Moshe were to look at the way that we practice Judaism, if Moshe were to wander on Mei Sha'arim, is Moshe more likely to say, what in the world are you people doing with fur hats in the Middle East? Or would he say, yes, the tradition has been passed on accurately. And I'm being perhaps somewhat facetious when I pick on the fur hats, but that's just a metaphor. What about the rest of the things that we have in our lives? If Moshe walked into our synagogues, if he walked into our shuls, if he walked into our batei midrash, if he walked into our kitchens, is it more likely that Moshe would say, yes, I know exactly what's going on, thank you, or would Moshe perhaps have somewhat of a quizzical look on his face, questioning what exactly are you people doing and where did this come from? Which means the question that this Agadah is addressing is a tantalizing question, right? You don't find it tantalizing?
Because the world changes. That's life. Now, from the time Moshe lived and the time you walk into our house on Mount Sharon, everything is so different. They'll say, well, what are you guys wearing? What kind of food are you eating?
What kind of music do you listen to? I mean, everything.
You wait how many hours? Okay, I'm kidding. Right? But still then, the response is still somewhat strange. Oh, I have this own tradition from Moshe at Sinai, which means you're stuck at the beginning or you're stuck at the end, but either way, this would seem to be a question. Yes?
I, with all due deference to my wife,
That was not all due deference.
I'm not so bothered by this because just cursory reading of it, it seems like, you know, he's kind of sitting there not knowing what's going on. And somebody mentions his name, to me that would seem like just the mention of his name is like, oh, thank God, I'm in the Parsha somewhere. He just felt like he's been forgotten and lost and whatever. And he hears his name, and to me that's why he kind of revived. To me the bigger question is, when he asks for the Sfar, why does Hashem not show the Rabbi Akiva that was celebrated, that was glorified? Why does he show him on a meat hook? I mean, that's not such a...
Good. See, here is a second candidate for what we can then say is what this text is really all about. The second candidate would really be the horrific scene. It's not, by the way, it's worse than horrific. We need a good word. It's grotesque. It's grotesque in many levels. It's grotesque in terms of what he actually sees, Rabbi Akiva's lifeless body on a meat hook, and it's grotesque because he could have shown him so many other aspects of Rabbi Akiva's life, including the moment that he was being killed, which all would have been completely more understanding. And where does that leave us then? Which means, here's a potential for what I could say is the major topic of this whole Agadah. What would it be? It would be, what does Moshe ask? He says, Zu Torah v'zu Schara. It's a question of things being fair. It's a question of what we would call today, perhaps, a tzaddik v'ra'lo, or perhaps somebody would call this as something requiring a theodicy. Which means, over here, there's actually two major theological issues which are being raised. One is questions about the tradition, or what we can call the Mesorah, and have things been passed on accurately, and that is clearly, in terms of theology, a major question. On the other hand, we have another major question which makes an appearance over here, and that is this whole problem of bad things happen to good people. The question is, are they both real problems, or is one the real one is not the real one, or what is the connection between the two, for that matter? Yeah.
I think it's a problem, is our relationship to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Like, is it tradition passed down, and therefore, as Jews, we have this connection to Kodesh Baruch Hu, or is it as people, is this the schar we get from a God? I mean, it's a problem. Who is this God?
Well, okay, I know it's bothering you. The problem with God in the text over here is that you would think that if you can ask God any question you want, that he'll give you an answer that you like.
No, I think the problem, I don't think that's a problem. I think the problem is there. It's a problem of anyone coming along and saying to any, let's say someone who's not full and say, what the heck are you keeping all this rubbish for? Because it's been handed down and you haven't got a clue if it's correct or not. You don't know where it's coming.
So this whole Agadah is anti-tradition.
Can you repeat what she said? We can't hear.
I have to understand what she said first.
It's a core question.
God is troubling. God is a troubling character in the story.
It's a problem.
Okay. God is a troubling character, and correct. I think it's more so because of God's responses.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay, good. What else? Yes.
Theologically, I find his response very disturbing because I didn't think I was involved in a religion where you're not encouraged to think and search for the answers.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Stock means don't think about it.
Well, perhaps.
Stock is not an answer that one expects to get.
Yeah, but if it had ended with Stock, then perhaps. Okay, good. Any other questions? Or that's it? Yes. Oh, no, this doesn't mean after Moshe dies. Quite the opposite. This means when Moshe goes above, when Moshe goes to get the Torah. This is not after Moshe dies. At least I would not understand it that way. What's holding you back from giving me the Torah? This is all when Moshe is there to receive the Torah. Yes?
It seems to me that Moshe is, in a way, questioning like the authenticity or like what's going to be happening with the believes in it, and like the whole religion, because if he can't see what God's giving him now and how it's going to be like a rot, then it's almost like what group of people is he leading? What's going to be happening with this nation? What is this religion that we're all talking about?
Okay. Good. Which is also leads us to another point. Moshe is not the hero of the story. Moshe's confused in the story, yes.
I think it's a lousy sales pitch. Because
which?
Moshe's going up to get the Torah.
Yeah.
And then he sees that this Rabbi Akiva, what his end is for learning Torah.
Right, right. But can I see his reward? And
it's
yeah.
Not the way you
God,
are
good, good. God is definitely very difficult. Okay. I want to stretch you a little bit, because you just read words. But let's think all over again now. If you were to view this, I'm going to give you two opportunities. Either if you were to view this as literature, or if you were to view this as a play, would you look at this very... Should you start as a play? Okay. If it were a play, how many scenes does it have? Okay, it is three? Okay, we start off on Har Sinai, we go into the classroom. Now the question is how we do the next part. Do we take him back to Sinai? Or, see, I mean, if I were producing it, I would freeze everybody else in the room and then just have God and Moshe again, but that really does go back to a Sinai type of a texture to it. Then we go to Rabbi Akiva's body, and then we again have this freeze frame and back. Did this help at all, or this didn't help whatsoever? Confused you more. Okay, so go to literature. If you were to look at this as literature.
What?
How many chapters? No, I'll tell you what I'm trying to get you to say, but my ventriloquism is not working very well. Is the thing which links the story is that we have the first scene where there's one of confusion. Then we have God giving a statement, and then God giving the same statement again, which means in terms of literature, the same statement which is being used, which punctuates the end of two of the scenes, obviously is what links it together. And the same thing would be true in terms of producing this, which means the moment of climax when we're about to get some kind of revelation, and by the way, revelation is very important to this whole thing. This whole story is about revelation. Why do I say the whole story is about revelation? Because Moshe's going up to get the Torah, that's revelation. What's the terrible irony that takes place when Moshe goes up to get the Torah? He goes up to the Torah to get revelation, and now for somehow he's convinced, because of what he asks, that to get revelation he needs to come back down for revelation. But wouldn't you think that the best place for revelation is actually up there, receiving the Torah from God is definitely the best place for revelation? Hold on to this thought in terms of, you know, where one has things revealed to them. The first thing I want to do is to push away the issues which are not important. Not to say it's not important, but I don't think it's the central issue. Meaning, when God says, shtok, kach ala b'machshava lefanai, which is a line which most of us have no idea what he's talking about, and we understand it the first time, and then it comes up the second time, so we now know that just because we didn't know what it meant the first time, doesn't mean we could ignore it, because it's still staring at us, and it's being thrown at us, which means when it comes back the second time, it just makes it even stronger that we have no idea what God's response actually was. So, holding on to that for a second, let me ask you this. Is the main purpose of this text to teach us an issue about why bad things happen to good people? Or, alternatively, is God just being real difficult over here? Yeah.
How much you try and understand, you can never understand because you're not at a certain level. You can never get to a certain level of understanding, which Moshe was trying to sort of say, explain to me what's happening. And God's trying to tell you, look, I'm sorry, there's a certain human level which you can understand. And no human, even the most elevated human, cannot get to that.
I respectfully disagree. You know why? Because most of us in this room know more than Moshe knows in terms of what happened to Rabbi Akiva, if not all of us. How did Rabbi Akiva die? Okay. how did he die? He died sanctifying God's name. How does he die with thousands of people all around? How does he die that when he's being threatened and being killed and being tortured, literally being skinned alive, he's still saying Shema and accepting upon himself one God? By the way, if Moshe would have seen that unfold in front of his eyes, what would Moshe have said? He would have said, wow. Think about all these years in the future. This is approximately 1,300 years, 1,400 years after Moshe lives. To say that 1,400 years from now, people will still be taking the Torah so seriously that they're willing to die for this and so on, and they're still willing to publicly, again, to declare their belief in God, all of that, I think, if Moshe would have seen Rabbi Akiva's death, it would have been completely different. But by the way, let's just look at it for a second. In source number 3, we have the death. B'shasha otzila Rabbi Akiva lahariga, zman kriyat shmahaya. The time that Rabbi Akiva was being executed, it was time to say Shema, and he was being skinned alive with metal combs. By the way, Ba'ahava is not an old text, this is in the Ein Yaakov's text. And he had in mind to accept upon himself really the unity of God at that moment. Amulo Tamidav, Rabbeinu Adkan, Rabbi, even in this situation, Amar Lehem, Kol Yamai Hayiti Mitzta'er al Pasuk Hazeh, my entire life, I had difficulty with this verse. Not that he didn't believe it, but do I really mean it? And by the way, the halacha dictates that when we say the words, V'avdat Hashem Lekecha, B'chol Levavcha, V'chol Nafshecha, V'chol Modecha, one should really believe that they love God to the extent of even perhaps having to give up their lives, even though we pray that we'll never be put in that situation. B'chol Nafshecha, V'afilo Notel Nafshecha. Even with all of your soul, even if God will take your soul. Amarti, matay yavo diva kemenu? When the situation arises for me, will I be able to fulfill this? V'achshav shabali liyadi, and now that I have the opportunity, lo akamenu, I'm not going to fulfill it. Hayimarich be'echad, he stayed and he focused on God being one, ad sheyitzta nishmato be'echad, as his soul departed with that unity. Yotzta bat kol, and a voice rang out of heaven, and said, V'amran said, Ashrecha Rabbi Akiva, fortunate are you, or praiseworthy Rabbi Akiva, Sheyetzta Nishmatcha Be'achad, that your soul departed saying, you know, with one. Now, Moshe didn't see this. The next part, Amu Malchea Sharet Lefnei Kadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono Shel Olam Zu Torah V'Zu Schara, the angels then ask, this is really fair. I'm going to skip the next line. Amar lehem chelkam b'chayim. His place is among the living. Yotz tabat ko va'amru lo ashrecha Rabbi Akiva shata mizuman l'chaylom haba. Rabbi Akiva, you're now being invited to the world to come. By the way, do you realize the irony of this? Moshe is going down looking for Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Akiva is going up. At the point that Moshe sees Rabbi Akiva's soul, sorry, that he sees his body, his soul is no longer there. Where is his soul? His soul is above. So we have Moshe looking for revelation coming below and Rabbi Akiva going up. And of course this is unfair because God showed him the wrong scene. God showed him the next scene. But by the way, this itself is a response to theodicy. This itself is an answer. What is it?
Theodicy, sorry.
It's trying to give an explanation of God's judgment. It's mainly used in Christian word. Jews don't talk about such things. The response over here would really seem to be, which us as the reader appreciates, the only one who doesn't get it is Moshe. But us as the reader, we know that if Moshe had seen the previous events and the next events, which is, had he seen Rabbi Akiva actually dying, he would not be asking this question. Had he seen Rabbi Akiva's soul soar into heaven, but he doesn't see it soar into heaven, why? Because Moshe's not in heaven. Moshe came down to see Rabbi Akiva. So Moshe's, again, I'm going to say the same thing again. Moshe's looking for revelation, but it seems to me he's looking for revelation in the wrong place. If anything, this text does offer a hint at an answer to why bad things happen to good people, and the answer over here is that we have limited perspective and therefore we don't know what's going on. And over here, the one who has limited perspective is none other than Rabbi Akiva, none other than Moshe, and we as the reader or the learner or the observer standing on the outside, that's what I said, we know more than Moshe knows, and we're more troubled with God showing Moshe this particular scene, and we're more troubled with what God says to Moshe than this particular case. And by the way, I would take it one step further. If you would have said to Rabbi Akiva, can you explain to me, tzaddik v'ralo, right? Why a person could be righteous and a bad thing happens? What would Rabbi Akiva say? Well, give me an example. And he would say, you. He would say, what are you talking about? It was your death, the way you were killed. What would Rabbi Akiva say? Would Rabbi Akiva himself see his death as a situation of tzaddik v'ralo? Or would he see his own death as a wonderful opportunity to be over at Hashem? Of course he said that, which is why I'm asking a rhetorical question, really, which means over here from saying this text is a problem of tzaddik v'ralo, say, what are you talking about? This isn't tzaddik v'ralo, why not? This is Rabbi Akiva. This is, exactly, that's the Kutzker Rebbe once said that. If he's a tzaddik, it's not ralo. But as much as the Kutzker can say this across the board, it's really true over here. Which means to pick Rabbi Akiva of all people and to say, oh, tzaddik, look how bad things happen to good people, Rabbi Akiva, he's smiling. He takes this with love, which means, again, this is a red herring. For the text over here to try to convince us that the real problem here is tzaddik v'ralo, it's absolutely not. If anything, it's a response to tzaddik v'ralo, which really then takes us back to what may be the main problem of the text. Is everything I just said in the last 5 minutes clear or not necessarily clear? Yeah. You're allowed to disagree. That's the beautiful thing. And you could talk. You can speak the next 9 weeks. Okay, go ahead.
That he would be comforted if he would have seen that scene. He was still asking God, what is the reward for Torah? And if the reward for Torah is being having your skin combed with metal combs, I'm not sure that's...
How did the text end? Rabbi Akiva's soul soars into heaven, to the highest places in heaven. Moshe, I'm going to again remind you, Moshe starts off this whole story in heaven. He should be seeing Rabbi Akiva's incredibly strong soul, holy soul, come into heaven and get his reward in heaven. That's how the text ends. But he didn't show him that scene. Rabbi Akiva, you're invited up in the world to come. Meaning, Moshe starts over there. He should be seeing Rabbi Akiva, greeting his soul over there, seeing the greatness of Rabbi Akiva. But again, I'm going to insist that this text is deliberately difficult. It wants us to think that there's more of a problem here than there is. But again, Moshe is the one who gets more confused than anyone. Correct. And I'm going to say it again. Moshe starts this whole thing from a unique perspective. What's that perspective? He's standing in heaven. And for some reason he believes he'll get revelation when he comes down. Okay, so all the little difficult parts of the text, you skipped over all of those, right? None of those concern you? All the things that you skipped? Yeah, but again, kol hakavod, you identified the main problems. You skipped all the little problems. That means you don't care about them or just we didn't notice them all? What? Okay, good. Good.
Is there any reason, or should one be questioned where this comes up in the Gemara?
Yeah, a little bit, but it's talking about letters there. The issue is letters there. You?
I don't think it's a big thing. I just find it curious. It keeps saying Amar Lefanav.
Right.
Like,
good.
Who else is there? These
good.
Two of them.
Good. What else? Anything else bother us? So that's it. Okay, I'm not going to help you. The eighth row or the 18th row, and good. What else?
I just have a general thought. I'm learning now on the Holocaust, and everybody's wondering, you know, how did this happen, how did whatever, and things happen, and we just see sometimes the last thing. We go, oh, that's horrible. How did that happen? And I think that this is not for Moshe; it's for us, for
good.
Else.
Good.
To say, look at the story, you know what happens, Moshe doesn't. Like you said, it's a play. In a play, the audience knows what's going on, but the person on stage doesn't, and we know. So Moshe doesn't, and Moshe is Moshe. So who are we when we see something happening in the world that we think, where was God, and why did this happen, or why did this person die, or get cancer, or whatever? and we don't know the whole story.
Correct. Which I'm going to say it again. We not knowing the whole story is definitely a theme which is in this text, because Moshe doesn't know the whole story, and Moshe keeps missing things. Okay, good. Yeah.
God couldn't have timed it so that it finished before Moshe went up.
He could have. Moshe asked. Well, you know, could have the timing had been a little more successful, that he could have seen Rabbi Akiva's soul come up. Okay, let's. Good. Who's holding back your hand? Good, which is also somewhat troublesome. Good. Nobody mentioned that. That itself is fascinating. Oh, I'm sorry. Go in back of yourself. What exactly does that mean? Okay, good. Okay, let's now continue. Let's look at the Rashi, because you're convinced that Rashi is right here, so let's look at Rashi, because he's convinced I've been wasting your time for the last 15-20 minutes. We just could have read Rashi. Let's read the Rashi. Rashi is... let's continue then. We read the first line of Rashi in source number 2. Second line, Shegila davar shetzarech tam. They got to a particular point that necessitated an explanation. Nityash vadato, that's Moshe felt better. Nityash vadato, show Moshe. Moshe felt better. Why did he feel better? Holel umishmo omer, that it's being said in his name, afapisha dain lo kibla, even though he had not received it yet. Now, what do you think Rashi just now did for you? Did Rashi just now help you? One second. I'm picking on you. Yeah.
Yeah, in a way, because Moshe said, I don't understand it right now, but in the future...
In 1982, there was a full-page ad out of the New York Times taken by the conservative movement saying Akiva, right? Sorry, Moshe did not understand what went on in Akiva's classroom because of all the advances that had taken place over the years. And then it says, and in our day, we're that much more advanced than they were. Basically, join your local conservative synagogue. Now, because we know far more than they did in the past. But it was interesting because the quote that it had there, all that it says is that Moshe came into the Akiva's class and didn't know what was going on. But it left out the next line. What's the next line? Next line is when the student asks, Rabbi, how do you know this? He says, oh, I know this from Moshe at Sinai. Now, Rashi seems to have anticipated that advertisement, and we can easily see Rashi writing, it seems to be, we can easily see Rashi writing a letter to the New York Times the next week. How can you put in such a blasphemous ad? It's a complete absurdity. Why does it seem that Akiva knows more than Moshe? What did Rashi just now apparently tell us? Because he had not received it yet, which means this is a little bit unfair. This is Moshe before he receives the Torah, and Rabbi Akiva after he received the Torah. Listen, there was a point in Rabbi Akiva's life he also didn't know anything. So if I would say today, well, I know more Torah than Rabbi Akiva did. You say, how old was Rabbi Akiva that when he was 39? Okay, that's not all that meaningful, because at 39 Rabbi Akiva had not started to learn yet. Which means over here, again, let's read the words of Rashi once again. Nityash vadato shemoshe. Moshe felt better. Holy mishmo omer, because it's being said in his name, afal pishadain lo kibla, even though he had not received it yet. Now, do you like what Rashi said, or do you not like what Rashi said?
Excellent.
Which means what we need to do whenever we have an interpretation, okay, just stop a second, because he skipped a step. What you need to do whenever you have an interpretation is read it back into the text. Okay, I'm exaggerating methodology right now, but it's important. Rashi just gave us an explanation, so now we read back into the text. We start the text in the beginning and say, does this work? Which means, according to what Rashi seems to be telling us, it sounds like the reason that Moshe doesn't know what's going on is only one reason. And what's that reason? He hasn't received it yet. What's the problem with that? Read it back in the text. What does the text actually say? That Moshe questions about the crowns. Now, if we were correct in this understanding, what should God have said to Moshe?
This is a Torah.
Right? Should have given him one of those and say, I'm about to tell you. But he doesn't say that. What does he say instead? He says, Adam echad yesh atid liyot b'sof kama derot v'akiva ben Yosef shmo v'hu atid l'drosh akol kotz v'kotz tilei tilin shalachot. Which means God didn't say, wait 2 minutes, I'm about to teach you. He says, there's one man who's going to live at the end of many generations. His name is Akiva, the son of Yosef. And he's going to know how to interpret upon each point on each crown, mountains upon mountains of law. By the way, your great explanation from Rashi, I don't mean to pick on Rashi, I'm picking on you. That didn't help us that much. In fact, now we're stuck. How did Rashi even say this? Yes? So again, in reality, that he was sitting here for 25 minutes, he said, he's wasting my time. Okay, Rashi explains it. I don't know how Rashi explains it. Quite the opposite. Again, I'm quite troubled with this Rashi, because it seems to be going directly against the text, unless you want to say something, which I don't like saying, that Rashi was so bothered by what he saw as being the major theological problem of the text, that he sacrifices the text in order to solve a theological problem. But it just does not feel right. Again, it could be. It just does not feel right. Because again, according to Rashi, there's no theological problem anymore. Why doesn't Moshe know what Rabbi Akiva knew? Because Moshe didn't get it yet. In 5 more minutes, he would have gotten it. So therefore, Moshe doesn't know what's going on in the class. And why? Because he hasn't learned anything yet. But he is about to learn it afterwards. And once he learns it, he knows it. But that's not what God says to him. God says to him, he's going to get it. Not you. By the way, let's just try it the other way around. Does Moshe really get the entire meaning? Okay, let me identify another problem over here, which none of you picked up on exactly or precisely. And then this, by the way, is interesting, because over the years I've had the opportunity of teaching many different types of groups, including some very, very, we can call them frum to a fault, you know, people from the frumest yeshivas, mir, brisk, whatever. And I would ask them, do you believe in Torah Misinai? And they would say, absolutely. I would say, can you tell me what is Torah Misinai? Never. They all believe it, but they have no idea what it is. Obviously, I just saw this again and again. And again, all that I do is ask a couple questions. Does Torah Misinai mean that we got the written Torah, the oral Torah, both? What exactly did we get from Sinai? When you say you believe in Torah Misinai, what do you believe? They all believe it. This is amusing. Unfortunately, it's amusing. So, let me now pick on you. So, what exactly did Moshe get Misinai? Did he get the written Torah, the oral Torah, or is this a true question, did he get both? What did Moshe get? Before we get to Rabbi Akiva, what did Moshe get Misinai? Good. Probably the opposite. She said he got the written and then the oral, and I'm saying it's probably the opposite. For example, when Moshe goes up to Sinai, by the way, in case you don't recall, is how long after the Jews leave Egypt? They leave Egypt, this is not a trick question. We leave Egypt when? Pesach, good. We leave Egypt on Pesach. We get to Har Sinai approximately how much later? Good. Moshe goes up for 40 days, and presumably this takes place at this particular juncture. Okay? During this time up on the mountain, what does Moshe get? Does Moshe get the entire written Torah at this point? Again, you could say yes. I've heard many nice yeshiva boys tell me yes. Moshe gets the entire written Torah at this point. So he gets the written Torah over the next 40 years in the desert. Does he wake up every morning and open up the Chumash and say, okay, what do I do today? Does Moshe hit the rock? Does Moshe hit the rock because he got up to Parshat Chukah? Oh, I got to hit the rock today. And if Moshe had no choice about hitting the rock, why should he get punished for hitting the rock? He had no choice about it.
There's some who say that he got what was up to that point.
Good.
And Hashem had him write occasionally.
Good, good, good. Actually, if you want, you can look in source number 4. Amar Rav Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Ban'a, Torah Migilah, Migilah Nitna. How was the Torah given? It was given in sections. And presumably, each of these sections were after the events transpired. Rashi goes in this direction, and therefore Rashi would say that before Moshe goes up, he gets Bereshit and he gets up to that point. Which, by the way, according to Rashi, he didn't get it, he got it before he went up to Sinai. Right? He gets it before. And the other section he writes after. Which means, again, even according to Rashi, he doesn't get sections of the written Torah at Sinai necessarily. According to the second opinion, Rav Shimon ben Lakish Omer, Torah Chatuma Nitna. He got the whole thing as one finished product. Shenemar, he quotes a verse at the end of Devarim, Lakuach et Sefer Torah Hazot. You should take this Sefer Torah. The Rambam in source number 5 undoubtedly follows Reish Lakish, ומצווה זו היא הנקראת תורה שבעל פה, כל התורה כתבה משה רבנו קודם שימות בכתב ידו. Moshe wrote the entire Torah before he died with his own hand, based upon God's dictation. Which means the written Torah, okay, I'll stop you mid-sentence. Two concepts, very similar, very different. One is called Torah Misinai, and the other is called Torah Min HaShamayim. What does Torah Misinai mean? The Torah that we got from God through Moshe at Sinai. What's the second phrase? Torah Min HaShamayim. What does Torah Min HaShamayim mean? Torah that we got from heaven. There could be a 40-year gap between the two. Torah Misinai is most likely, if I'm not mistaken, Torah Shebaal Peh. And Torah Min HaShamayim is Torah Shebichtav. I think this works pretty consistently if you're going through sources. By the way, according to everything I just now said, our source makes no sense whatsoever, because what does it say? That he's putting the finishing crowns on the letters. By the way, it is possible, and this is a very minimalistic approach, which may be true, it is possible he's talking only about Aseret HaDibrot. And the Aseret HaDibrot are part of the written Torah and part of the oral Torah, and the Aseret HaDibrot therefore do have the crowns on them, and the Aseret HaDibrot, you know, are actually all pregnant and have much more applications of them, and therefore it could be in a sense both. But I'm just saying it is real interesting that this Agada is talking about the crowns on the letters at Sinai when Moshe goes above, but that's not what Moshe got when he went above, if we're going to be overly technical. When Moshe went above, what did he get? He got the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Torah Sheba'al Peh, does it have crowns on it? Okay, so I'm saying that itself is interesting. Or we could say, Ein Mishivin al Adrush, we're talking about an Agadah, and don't be overly technical, and let it go a little bit. Tamar. Okay, I'll get to that in a second. By the way, Tilei Tilin Shalachot, which again, this is a little thing that nobody was interested in, but that itself is a fascinating phrase. Tilei Tilin Shalachot. What is a tail? What is a tail? Yes. I'm picking on her. She's a tour guide. What's a tail? Isn't that interesting that that's the phrase used over here? What word could have it used? If it wanted to say mountains upon mountains, it could have said har, it could have said giv'ah, it could have used many words, but it uses the word tel. Okay, why is that interesting? Right, a tel can only be built, right? You all know what the word tel aviv, you all know what a tel is, right? A tell means that there's many generations that it's being built upon. Now, isn't that interesting that that's the phrase which it uses over here? The Rabbi Kiva is driving tilim, tilei tilim shel halachot, which means that there is all kinds of levels, not something completely new necessarily. Yes, that itself should be... Again, this is the kind of thing that when you're learning an Agadah, you need to pay attention to the words. Don't just let them get away with it and not pay attention, including the things like the 8th row, the 18th row, and so on. Those things have to be paid attention to as well. What you were saying is most succinctly articulated in source number 6. Inyan Rabbi Akiva Shahaya Doresh Kol Kota. This is in a book which I happen to have at home. It's called the Shulchan Aruch of the Arizal. It's not a regular Shulchan Aruch. It has mystical explanations to all kinds of mitzvot, written by the Vital family. Inyan Rabbi Akiva Shahaya Doresh Kol Kots Vekots Tilei Tilin Shalachot. The manner of Rabbi Akiva, who interpreted on each point, mountains upon mountains, or how would you translate now a tale in English? What?
Piles and piles.
Shel halachot, ad shekimat, it saves Moshe a little bit, ad shekimat toshash kochol shemoshe, until Moshe was almost rendered depressed. Kiniskar b'divrei razal, as the rabbis have taught. V'chein amu chachamim, and the rabbis also say, now this is an interesting theological statement, there were things that were revealed to Rabbi Akiva that were not revealed to Moshe. Look at source 8 and 9, and then we'll come right back to that. 8, it's in Psikta Draf Kahana. The Amr of Acha, Dvaram Shalom Niglu Moshe B'Sinai, Niglu Rabbi Akiva V'Chavirav. V'choya Kavrata Eino, Zer Rabbi Akiva. All precious things his eyes saw. Which means Rabbi Akiva saw things that Moshe didn't know. By the way, this is a preposterous statement. I don't mean to pick on Chazal. Obviously, we accept this statement, but at first glance, it's preposterous. What's it saying? We thought that all Torah comes from Moshe, but Rabbi Akiva sees things that Moshe didn't see. So what the Arizal is saying, hold it. You know, what's going on here? Also in source number 9, Eilo devrim asitim velo azavtim ese en ktiv ela asitim. Shekfar asiti l'Rabbi Akiva v'chaverov, drom shelo niglu l'moshe niglu Rabbi Akiva v'chaverov. And so on. So over here, again, there's two different places in Medrash Rabbah and the Psikta. We see a number of places in Chazal that it tells us. There are things that Rabbi Akiva sees that Moshe himself did not see. So, over here, the Arizal, and again, I think correctly, is putting these passages together and saying, Moshe not knowing what's on in the classroom, and this thing saying that Rabbi Akiva knew more than Rabbi Akiva needs to be understood together. By the way, it's clear from this that the Arizal does not accept what we, again, understood from Rashi, that the only reason that Moshe doesn't know because he didn't get it yet, he seems to be very clearly not going in that direction, back in source number 6. And the truth is, remember, it's preposterous. This is shocking. This is a very difficult idea. Moshe is the source for Torah. How could it be that Akiva knows more than Moshe? This does not make sense. This is a theological problem. Moshe certainly knew all things that would become revealed in the future. Moshe only mastered the Torah she'baal peh. I'm overstating this line. Amnam harbe mehem lo haya yodei l'darsham ulatziya me'akatuv. Much of what he knew, he was unable to open up the text and to derive it himself from the text. Ad shebu chachamim v'yudarshim b'kol dor v'dor v'kein inyan b'Rabbi Akiva. Until the rabbis of every generation came and showed how to derive it, and that's the matter of Rabbi Akiva as well. Let me start with what I said before, because just in case you thought, again, I was wasting your time, I don't believe I was. Moshe Rabbeinu receives first which? The Torah Shebichtav or Torah Shebapeh? Now, we're so used to how we learn. How do we learn? First, we open up the Torah Shebichtav. We open up the Chumash. Then we say, okay, what does this text mean? And then we start learning and deriving, right? That was the major change in evolution when man got an opposable thumb and was able to learn Gemara. Then we start being able to derive from the text to understand what the text meant, because the text is primary. Now I'm pointing out to you the probability or the possibility or really the probability that Moshe Rabbeinu first receives the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Okay, well, at least let's follow what we saw clearly in the Rambam. First he receives the Torah Sheba'al Peh, and afterwards he receives the Torah Shebichtav. Do you realize how different his learning is going to be? How different his knowledge is? How different his understanding is? Which means Moshe's use of the Torah Shebichtav will be completely different from our use of the Torah Shebichtav. Why? Because he already knows what it all means. How does he know what it all means? Because he already knows the Torah Sheba'al Peh. Again, take a simple case. We know, for example, Ayin Tachat Ayin, except if you're Rabbi Yishmael, that Rabbi Lezer, sorry, that Ayin Tachat Ayin is money, right? Moshe learns that halacha, that you pay money if you do damages. At the very end of his life, he gets the pasuk, and how is it written in the pasuk? And again, I don't want to argue when Mishpatim is said and so on. At the end, it's written down, Ayin Tachat Ayin. Moshe already knows what Ayin Tachat Ayin means, which is he knows the law, he knows the halacha, which is his whole orientation to Torah Shebichtav is completely different. What the Arizal is saying over here is that Moshe does not know what takes place in a large part of Midrashei Chazal, Midrashei Halacha, and to a large extent takes place in the Gemara. And what's that? Saying, how do I know this particular law? Where do we learn it out from? Okay, let me start all over again. Moshe knew, and I want to say something clearer than I said it before, because what I said before wasn't clear, and you'll tell me I didn't say it right, you'll play back the tape and said I said it wrong. Moshe received the entire Torah Shebal Peh. Moshe received the entire Torah Shebichtav. Torah Misinai, Torah Min HaShemayim. Moshe has both. But Moshe did not know how to derive Torah Shebal Peh from Torah Shebichtav. Why did he not know how to derive it? Because he was on a higher level. Because he's on a higher level. Which means, again, we start with the Torah Shebichtav, and we believe the Torah Shebichtav comes from God. Now we have to know, okay, now how do you understand it? So we have the Midot and various ways of deriving it, and then we try to show how our halacha is derived from the Torah Shebichtav. Again, with Moshe, it's the complete opposite. How does Moshe know Torah Shebal Peh? God said it to him. That's it. No more discussion. God said to it, that's the end of the discussion. There's nothing more to talk about. When, by the time that Rabbi Akiva's generation came along, people questioned. How do I know people question that generation? You have many other sects around who are questioning the validity of Torah Shebal Peh. They're questioning the process of Torah Shebal Peh. They're questioning the ability of deriving new laws out of Torah Shebal Peh. And Rabbi Akiva, the great Rabbi Akiva, comes and he shows how you can learn out of every single, and the normative Gemara writes, every single Vav and Et in the Torah. He shows how every single Vav and Et, which is not necessary, you can learn laws out of it. And this Gemara comes and says, not only every Vav and Et Rabbi Akiva teaches us, he even teaches us how every crown on the letter. So what's the crown on the letter? The crown on the letter would seem to be something which is not in the letter, something external to the letter, something which is connecting the letter to something else. I would say the crowns on the letter would be the drashot. They're not in the text, but they come out of the text. Moshe looks at the text itself, he knows the text. He knows the lacha. He doesn't need to know the drashot. And by the way, I would further say that the drashot are, in a certain sense, they are the soul of the Torah. It's the neshama of the Torah. And then you may have a parallel between the beginning of the story and the end of the story, where you see Rabbi Akiva's body without his soul. Because Rabbi Akiva's body without the soul is parallel to the text of the Torah without the drashot. The difference, of course, is that Rabbi Akiva, without his soul, you just look at it, you look at this terrible, horrific death. On the other hand, you look at the text without the crowns on them. Moshe understands the text without the crowns. And therefore, according to what the Arizal is saying, in the next source, in source number 7, the Or HaChaim says the exact same thing, that Moshe Rabbeinu knows the Torah Shebal Peh, Moshe knows the Torah Shebichtav, Moshe does not know how to connect the two, because Moshe's on a higher level. You want to read that back into Rashi now? Just 1 second. How long do I speak? An hour? More? What do we decide? No, what am I supposed to? How long is
it? An hour.
That's what you're paying for. That's it. We don't go a minute over. We'll see. We'll decide. Go ahead. Say that again, say that again. Moshe knew the...
How is it sometimes in the Torah we find that Moshe did not know the halakha? For example, the notes of the halakha, he didn't know the halakha.
So now the question with... Right. So the question with notes of the halakha, is it possible that halakha was only presented b'schut notes of the halakha, who raised that question? It was not there originally. Right. Right, I'm saying there could be a number of things, I can say very simply, that they were not there originally because people asked. God gave it at that particular point. It bothers you. No. It may be Pshat in the Chumash. Most of the places where we get the impression that Moshe forgot, I have a feeling that he had a personal negiyah that he couldn't say. I don't want to get into each case right now, but take what I'm saying now and try to apply it, and I think you'll see that it works. You want one example of it? One example would be by Pinchas. Moshe himself had married a Moabite, so therefore Moshe over here couldn't say anything. So the text doesn't say Moshe forgot, by the way. It's Chazal who come and say that Moshe forgot. Moshe doesn't respond. He lets Pinchas respond. That's why we need definitions. We need better definitions. There is something that I would now call pristine Torah Shebal Peh. What makes it pristine Torah Shebal Peh? That's what God says to Moshe. There's lots of other discussions in Torah Shebal Peh. So now the question is, does Moshe get all those discussions as well? So that already becomes a difference of opinion among much later authorities. I would say again, the pristine Torah Shebal Peh would be the halachot that Moshe gets at Sinai. Halachot Moshe be Sinai. That's pristine Torah Shebal Peh. I would add to it that there's also issues within Hashkafa as well, which are also part of pristine Torah Shebal Peh, which are the parallel to them. But I'm not right now defining. Which is, if you're going to ask me, is it a point of emunah to believe that Moshe know every single Tosfot? So if people will say yes, and other people will say, what are you talking about? So over here, even within the Midrashim, there are Midrashim which are earlier and there are later. Did Moshe know this Gemara that we started to study with today? For that matter, I can ask another question. Did Rabbi Akiva know this Gemara? He knew things that Moshe didn't know. What's this? By the way, this is one of the things that nobody paid attention to also. What was the source of the teaching? Where'd it come from? First couple words. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda said this in the name of Rav. As far as we can tell, who is the first one to say this teaching? Rav. Okay, now that's a real interesting point. What is Rav trying to teach us? Where did Rav get this from? Did Rav make this up? Does Rav have a tradition? Did Rabbi Akiva learn this when he was a little kid? And he, guess what? Moshe went into your classroom, didn't know what's going on. You got a big future in front of you, kid. I mean, is that what happened? Or is this something which is made up by Rav? Again, we have a strange sense sometimes in terms of truth and not truth. Over here, this Agadah is trying to communicate something to us. What it's trying to communicate, we're still trying to figure out. Let's recap for today, because we did not explain everything. We're going to have to continue next time. We have a very strange passage of Moshe being up in heaven, not knowing what's going on. Sorry, we'll start. Moshe being up in heaven asks God, why are you putting these crowns in the letters? God says, there's one man in the future. His name is Akiva. He goes in back of himself. He finds himself in the classroom. Doesn't know what's going on. Gets depressed. One of the students says, Rabbi, the stuff you're teaching us, where did you get it from? He says, I have this from tradition from Moshe at Sinai. According to Rashi, the way that would work out, it's a little strange. Well, Moshe doesn't know because he didn't get it yet. Why does Moshe feel better? It's also a little strange. Why should he get depressed if he didn't receive it yet? But as a matter of fact, according to Rashi, the whole story doesn't make sense. Why did he get depressed? Why did he feel better? Well, the whole thing is a little strange. Again, if we're right in the way we read Rashi. On the other hand, the Arizal gave what I think is a brilliant interpretation. He says Moshe doesn't know what's going on. Why? Why does he know what's going on? Because they're talking about the derivations of the text. It's the Tilei Tehillim Shalachot. All of it is built upon earlier levels. Moshe, you know, it's almost like Einstein walking into even a high school classroom today, listening to applications of the theory of relativity when he never saw those applications. It's not a perfect example. It's not a perfect example. This is a sign we have to stop.
Can you repeat that again, what you said?
Yeah. It would be analogous.
Moshe didn't know what was going on
because why? Because he knew the principles. Let me say this again. Moshe knew the law, the way the Arizal said it. Moshe knows the law, but he doesn't know how to derive the law from the text. Why does he not know it? Because he heard the law directly from God. He does not need to know how to derive it from the text.
He doesn't know how to analyze? Is that what you're saying?
He doesn't need to know how to analyze. Okay. The main thing that we don't understand is when God gives an answer. What we also did today is we pushed aside the whole problem of, is this really an issue of bad things happening to good people, or is that trying to confuse us a little bit? But even if it was trying to confuse us, what is this line when God says, Kach ala b'chshav lefanai? Ultimately, the other thing is that Rabbi Akiva clearly would seem to be the hero of the story, and Moshe seems remarkably confused. Well, what exactly did Rav want us to learn from that, and what ultimately is the message of the story? Okay, so now we will continue B'lei Neder next time.